part of something bigger than itself that is going forward in many ways around the globe today. Namely, a new basis. We're judging meaning and value and that new basis is self-appropriation of human interiority. Most people in the course of history, and most people even today, judge meaning and value on the basis of practical common sense. Something is meaningful, something is valuable, if it is going to solve palpable practical problems. Either in one's own personal life or in society. Most people use practical common sense as the basis for judging meaning and value. Practical common sense has its place. If you're trying to cross a busy street, you don't want to get into the intellectual pattern of experience. You'll never make it across the street. You don't want to try to figure out trying to cross a busy street, what the probability is of car A hitting car B. You see? The mathematical probability. You want to know what's the likelihood that car A is going to hit me. You see? That's practical common sense, the relationship between this to yourself. Yeah? It has its place. But has an ultimate basis for judging meaning and value. It's inadequate. People who take their stand on practical common sense as the ultimate basis for judging all meaning and value reject all theoretical questions. And reject all ultimate questions. Is what I'm about really worthwhile? Is it worth even using my practical common sense? The ultimate question about the project of one's own life is not faced. Yeah. Modern science extends the basis for judging meaning and value to theory. Modern science says practical common sense is not enough. We need theory as well. And so it constructs elaborate theoretical systems to try to understand the meaning of the universe. But that breaks down at a certain point too, when you get conflicting theories that are both aware of the same data. But give you a conflicting interpretation of that data. There's a need for what Lonergan calls a third stage of meaning. In which the basis for judging the serious questions of meaning and value in human life is found in our own appreciation of the demands of human consciousness, the exigencies, the imperatives of human consciousness. Who are we? We can recognize meaning and value. We can recognize and distinguish genuine meaning from false meaning, real value from apparent value, if we know ourselves. That's the basic plan. If we know ourselves and know that the exigencies of our own consciousness We can make the distinction between genuine meaning and false meaning, genuine value and merely apparent value. That's the claim. That the third stage of meaning we make. Come to know yourself as a human subject, and out of that you can make judgments of meaning and value that you can rely upon. Now, depth psychology is part of that movement. That's the first thing. Depth psychology is part of that movement. My article, Jungian Psychology and Christian Spirituality, the first of those three articles in the Religious, deals with this. I don't call it the third stage of meaning. I do treat there the inadequacy of common sense, the inadequacy of theory, and the need for interiority as a basis. Lonergan deals with it in Chapter 3 of Method and Theology on meaning. And there he's much more technical than I am in my article. He deals with the stages. All right. Let me just indicate why I believe we need this third stage of meaning. In other words, I'm trying to give you an indication of what a depth psychology that takes its stand on human flourishing would be all about. Why do we need this third stage of meaning, the self-appropriation of human interiority? I think we need it because there is a certain repression or forgetfulness that is at the inner core of modern and contemporary cultural experience, the public consciousness of many, at least, of the cultures of the world today has forgotten something, has repressed something. And that something can be regained, retrieved, only through self-knowledge. There is a forgetfulness, a repression of a basic truth about human existence. And that repression is constitutive of the air we breathe, of the public consciousness that most of us, and I would say probably all of us, are a part of. All right, what has been forgotten? What has been repressed? That's the question. Repression, forgetfulness are terms that are used by a number of authors to try to describe what we're going through today. But authors differ with regard to what is the basic thing that's being repressed or forgotten. I think all of you probably have enough knowledge of Freud to be familiar with what he says is the basic repression, namely the repression of sexuality and sexual desire. Freud speaks about the repression of sexual desire and the need to convert that repression from a neurotic form to a healthy form. Freud is not saying, you know, let it all hang out when he's dealing with the repression of sexuality. He's trying to convert the repression of sexuality from a neurotic form to a healthy form. Ernest Becker speaks of the repression of the fear of death. That this is the basic truth about human existence that we have forgotten as we have erected our systems of power. We have forgotten our creaturehood. We have forgotten that we are mortal animals doomed to die. And to resurrect that fear of death and then transcend it in truth is the answer to the reorientation of humanity along the path of truth for Ernest Becker in the denial of death. Martin Heidegger speaks of the forgetfulness of being. The long history of Western metaphysics, from Plato to the present time, has been a progressive forgetfulness of the revelatory experience of being as it manifests, unveils its truths to Dasein, to human consciousness. religious thinkers speak of the death of God. God is dead to contemporary consciousness. Some of them celebrate that, and others try to overcome it. These are all attempts to locate a basic truth about modern experience. Here's my position. I draw on Eric Vogelin, but I go beyond him as well. My position is the following, that in the course of recorded history, at least, those of you who were in religion and culture last year are familiar with this already, in the course of recorded history, human societies have discovered three dimensions of what makes for human flourishing. In the long course of our recorded history, we can find evidence of these discoveries. I believe that the basic human experience can be articulated as follows. We are searching for direction in the movement of life. We are searching for direction in the movement of life. Three major discoveries as to how we find that direction can be found in recorded history. First major discovery is that we find direction in the movement of life by being in harmony with the rhythms and processes of non-human nature. There is needed some kind of harmony between culture and nature. We need to respect and listen to and respond to the rhythms and processes of non-human nature. This is the whole realm of what Eric Vogelin calls cosmological truth. It is still found in a number of cultures who have not lost that basic discovery. The cosmological truth that the finding direction in the movement of life depends on being in harmony with the rest of the cosmos. The second discovery, which comes to the fore in Western culture, at least in philosophy and in Greek philosophy, is that the ultimate measure of human integrity lies beyond the cosmos. Without denying the need for harmony with the rest of the cosmos, the ultimate measure is transcendent. And so I find direction in the movement of life to the extent that I am in harmony with the God who draws me to himself. And with what that God, it's not necessarily personal in Greek philosophy, with what that God is, to the extent that I find harmony with the movement of the divine drawing me to itself, I find direction in the movement of life. Vogelin refers to that discovery as anthropological truth. It's the truth about humanity. We are made for something that lies beyond the cosmos, and we find direction to the extent that we are in harmony with what lies beyond the cosmos, what is transcendent. The third discovery is soteriological. The God who lies beyond the cosmos has entered into human history to redeem humanity so that it can find direction. And that truth emerges most clearly in Israel and Christianity, soteriological truth. That
the God who lies beyond the cosmos does not stay beyond the cosmos in some kind of empyrean heaven, but has entered into human history to change it, to redeem his people from slavery and bondage, from oppression, self-destructiveness. And so I find direction to the extent that I find God's saving purpose in my regard, his initiative, his gracious initiative in coming to me and redeeming me. Now, each one of those has a truth. One doesn't replace the other. There's a truth to all three of those. Also, however, each one of those truths has been suppressed in the cultural consciousness of modern humanity. And so, the repression of the first truth, it lies behind our ecological crisis. We have lost our contact with the rhythms and processes of nature because we are no longer convinced that finding direction demands being in harmony with that non-human creature. Each of those truths is an indication of a larger reality in which we participate. And it's an insight into the fact that we find direction only to the extent that we participate in something that is larger than ourselves. That we are not gods. We are not the creators of the universe. We find direction only to the extent that we listen to and respond to what is greater than ourselves. And each of those is an insight into what it is that is greater than ourselves. A cosmological insight into the harmonies of the non-human universe. The anthropological insight into the existence of the divine. Made us for itself or himself or however they conceive that, and the soteriological insight that divine has entered into history to bring us to itself, himself. So the basic truth of human existence I would put as follows. The most prized treasure of the human heart is the direction to be found in the movement of life. When I am finding the direction and walking along that path, my heart has found what it is looking for. And I know it. And when I have lost that direction or have not yet found it or am not walking along that path, I know it. Very clear. And these three breakthroughs have discovered that direction is found by humbly participating in a reality that is greater than myself. And I don't participate like a puppet. I've got my own contribution to make to that reality, but it's a two-way street. A partnership. Human existence is a partnership, a participation in being that is greater than myself. Can I just finish this point? So I believe that we have lost the cosmological, the anthropological, and the soteriological truth from our public cultural consciousness. It is not part of the cultural air that we breathe. No one of those. As, for instance, the cosmological truth was part of certain societies, the anthropological truth was present in Greek society, and the soteriological truth is present in a society that is really influenced by Christianity. It was present in the society of Israel. Because we have, in the last six centuries or so, elevated expediency in the interest of power to central stage. We have made that. That is the value that is prized in the public cultural consciousness that most of us are a part of. Expediency in the interest of power. Power over nature, power over others, power over history. We have made this our God, our value, our primary value. And it's all around us. It perverts. It's a cancer. It perverts the air. It breathes.
Mixed metaphors.
Now, you can do a lot of work, and I'm not going to go into the background of this. Vogelin has studied in the new science of politics the roots of this loss of the cosmological, anthropological, and soteriological truth. And the villain for Vogelin is Thomas Hobbes, the Bible. It is Hobbes who is at the beginning of this loss. Sense of participation in the greater reality. Others would go back a little bit beyond, further in history and root it with Machiavelli's The Prince. Certainly his presence in Machiavelli, everybody, as much as it is in Hobbes. Expediency in the interest of power. Integrity and truth mean nothing for Machiavelli. And the prince has got to reject conscience in order to fulfill his responsibilities. The same thing is true with Hobbes' Leviathan. Okay. Vogelin also has a very good paper called The Gospel and Culture. It appears in a book called Jesus and Man's Hope, edited by Miller. For those of you who want to, Vogelin is really worthwhile. That his own interpretation of our modern cultural situation. And basically what he's saying is that before the gospel can be preached to modern culture, the question has to be resurrected. The question of the search for direction in the movement of life has got to be brought alive before the gospel will make sense to contemporary hearts. The question is dead. The death of God is rooted in the death of humanity. The basic question about human existence is dead. Search for direction in the movement of life. And so talk of God has no meaning if the question to which talk of God is intended as an answer is dead. The point is to resurrect the question. And then perhaps you can begin to preach the gospel to contemporary minds and hearts in a way that will make sense to them. All right, now, all I want to say is that depth psychology is a way, one dimension, of the recovery of the question. The kind of psychology that I want to point to. Of a recovery of the question and of a recovery to responses to the question. The three responses that have been given to the person. Cosmological, the anthropological, sociological. One dimension of that recovery of the question that can take place as we come to know ourselves as subjects in self-appropriation. I'd like to break it now. I'll take questions right after the break. Sorry for going over. It's great for 10 minutes.